Hello, this is Dave Lynn. Thank you for joining me for the Deep Dive with Dave podcast. I'm fortunate to be joined today by Rhonda Brower, who's president and founder of RLB Governance, LLC. Rhonda provides strategic ESG consulting services to investors, companies, nonprofits, and NGOs. And Rhonda has had a variety of roles in corporate governance, including with issuers, investors, and thought leadership organizations. And she spent a number of years as the corporate secretary and corporate governance officer at the New York Times Company. Rhonda, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thanks for inviting me to speak with you, Dave. I'm happy to be here.
Well, there's certainly a lot of attention on the climate change disclosure rules that the SEC recently proposed, but in the present, companies really need to be considering their engagement with investors on the governance of climate risk. And recently, Ceres announced new guidance for investor engagement with companies on the governance of climate risk. And Ceres noted that investors and proxy advisors can use this guidance for engaging with portfolio companies on the risks and opportunities emerging in the transition to a net zero emissions economy and to inform their voting decisions on electing boards of directors. I had a few questions for you about that guidance and what that means for companies during this proxy season. Could you explain who Ceres is and its overall role and perspective on these topics?
Sure. Ceres is a U.S.-based nonprofit organization working with capital market leaders, including investors, companies, other nonprofits, and governments, to try to solve the world's greatest sustainability challenges. Ceres is often associated with one of its many initiatives as one of the founding partners of the Climate Action 100 Plus initiative, for which it helps to coordinate investor engagements with companies in North America. Launched in December 2017 and designed for investors, the CA 100 Plus initiative aims to ensure that the world's largest corporate greenhouse gas emitters take necessary action on climate change. More than 700 CA 100 Plus investor signatories responsible for over $68 trillion in assets under management are currently engaging companies to ask them to improve their climate change governance, to cut their emissions, and to strengthen their climate-related financial disclosures. The work of the CA 100 Plus initiative is coordinated by five regional investor networks. In addition to Ceres, these are the Asia Investor Group on Climate Change, or AIGCC, the Investor Group on Climate Change, IGCC, the Institutional Investors Group on Climate Change, IIGCC, and the Principles for Responsible Investment, or PRI. A year ago, the CA 100 Plus launched its Net Zero Company Benchmark to assess the performance of their focus companies against the initiative's three high-level goals: emissions reduction, governance, and disclosure. The benchmark helps investor signatories evaluate company action in tackling climate change. 159 focus list companies were included in the first set of assessments published in March 2021. Second set of assessments were just released on March 30th for 166 focus list companies.
And what prompted the latest guidance from Ceres on engagement regarding climate risk governance?
The guidance follows two events from last proxy season, although the groundwork for this guidance arguably was years in the making. First was the historic 2021 vote on ExxonMobil directors that resulted in three dissident candidates with climate strategy or renewable energy backgrounds being elected to the company's board. That vote was a powerful signal that investors are not going to support boards that are not climate competent, particularly at a fossil fuel company like Exxon. Second was the large number of climate-related shareholder proposals from last proxy season that passed, about 18, including one on which I worked closely and which emphasized climate governance in the related company engagement as well as in the exempt solicitation letter and the discussions with large investors. Added to this background is the fact that investors have been increasingly engaging companies on climate-related risks and opportunities by looking to the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, or TCFD, which has received strong support from both investors and companies, as well as the G20 finance ministers and central bank governors. In the case of the CA 100 Plus focus companies, investors are also looking to the company's net zero benchmark assessment. Now they can also look to the series guidance to hold board members of their portfolio companies accountable for the oversight and actions needed to drive their company's climate commitments to the net zero transition. This guidance provides more detail than is generally currently provided in investor voting guidelines and policies. This should serve to help investors to interpret their generally principles-based guidelines and policies by giving them a tool to elicit more detailed disclosures of how companies are living up to climate governance expectations. In cases where expectations are not met, the guidance can assist with investor decisions to vote against relevant directors. In my consulting work for Ceres on this guidance, I was struck by the 2021 TCFD status report, which reported that companies were failing to do what's asked by the TCFD recommendations. In fact, the two TCFD governance recommendations were among the least implemented of the TCFD recommendations. While governance may not be more important than the other three TCFD pillars or the net zero benchmark indicators, I think that governance is a foundational element to support the other recommendations and indicators. Therefore, I think governance disclosures should be among the first steps taken by executive teams and board members who are serious about addressing climate-related risks and opportunities. If responsible and climate-competent board members are specifically tasked with overseeing these other items, Ceres hopes and expects that will drive the overall transition to a net zero emissions economy for all companies. Ceres believes that the guidance points to the direction in which all U.S. public companies should be moving on their journeys to address the net zero emissions transition. The guidance is not just for heavy emitting companies. Other companies may still face urgent systemic threats from climate change through, for example, their supply chain or their physical location. That being said, the guidance does note that mitigating factors may be appropriate for companies in different industries and in different places on their climate journeys. For all of these reasons, I hope that boards will be able to use this guidance in their internal discussions, in their executive sessions, and with management as they oversee their company's climate-related risks and opportunities as well as related disclosures. It should also help both boards and management teams prepare for shareholder engagement by checking to see where they stand on the 10 practices listed in the guidance.
And what are some of the key suggestions that Ceres makes in this guidance?
Before getting to the suggestions, I note that companies may want to disclose where they are in their journeys for each of the 10 practices on their websites, if not in their next proxy statement. I'm going to highlight 6 of the 10 recommended practices in the guidance. These include the following, and please note there is additional helpful detail under each of the practices headings in the guidance. First is effective board oversight of climate-related risks and opportunities and greenhouse gas emission targets. Second is effective management responsibility for assessing and managing climate-related risks and opportunities. Here, I'm very focused on the distinction between these two roles, board oversight versus management of day-to-day operations. The board is also responsible for firing the CEO and team who does not effectively carry out their responsibilities for implementing agreed-upon strategy that assesses and manages climate-related risks and opportunities. If the board does not do this, then it is left to shareholders to hold them accountable at the ballot box. Third is sufficient board-level capabilities and competencies to oversee climate-related risks and opportunities. So what does Ceres mean by this type of board-level climate competency? In the commentary under this practice, Ceres notes the following detail. Companies should disclose sufficient information to make their case for the climate competency of their board. What would this look like? This disclosure could include such things as board matrices and director biographies that support the experience and expertise listed in the board matrices. Ceres notes that no one director will make a climate competent board. Rather, a board should assess and be able to explain how the different directors' experiences contribute to thoughtful discussions and meaningful connections with the company's long-term strategy, given the unique climate risks and opportunities that a particular company faces. Fourth is sufficient board and senior management response to majority-supported investor votes that are contrary to board recommendations. Within a reasonable time after the vote, companies should adequately address the investor concerns behind the vote and disclose the company's response. Adequately is the key word here. And here, based on my experience on the investor side, I generally recommend that companies take their shareholders up on any offer to provide an advance review of your disclosures before your public release. Your serious investors will treat that information confidentially, and their comments can be very helpful. Generally, they won't have the expectation that all of their comments will be taken, but you'll get a sense of whether your disclosures will be received as adequate by your investors and other stakeholders. One pet peeve that I have from the investor side is when a company that has lost a shareholder proposal vote but does not give the lead investors a heads up about what will be disclosed and when. That tends to weaken, if not break, the bonds of trust that may be established over the course of their engagement, and for reasons that I don't understand, even with my over two decades of experience on the corporate side. Fifth is audit committee oversight of climate risks and disclosures. Audit committees should direct the company's internal audit department and its independent auditors to include in their respective work scopes, one, sufficient testing of the impacts of climate change risk on the company's operations, and two, review of the related disclosures in the company's audited and interim financial statements, including, for example, whether any asset valuation write-downs are appropriate, with clear disclosure of the assumptions used in their testing. The last practice that I'll highlight is that companies should provide the TCFD recommended disclosures. If a company's TCFD reporting does not currently disclose information for all 11 recommendations, then the company should disclose a time frame for making public all of the recommended disclosures.
That is really helpful. Thanks very much. How do you see the issue of climate risk governance playing out, in particular during the 2022 proxy season?
Great question, Dave. Investors are increasingly ready to hold directors of U.S. public companies accountable for failing to appropriately oversee their company's climate-related risks and opportunities. So how would this play out? First, I expect to see more votes against directors this proxy season, as well as some vote no campaigns, plus even more in 2023, as I expect to see even more escalation for non-responsive boards and management teams. Second, I expect to see more focus on failing to respond adequately to majority-supported shareholder proposals. As a former corporate secretary, I like focusing on board governance of climate-related risks and opportunities. If a board includes such oversight in a committee charter, then I know that it should be allocated time on a committee meeting agenda. Otherwise, when it comes time for annual board evaluations, the committee members will look at someone like me and ask, have we done everything that's included in our committee charter? At the New York Times Company, we always made sure collectively that this happened. And if it's on a committee meeting agenda, responsible members of management will be preparing materials to send in advance to review at these committee meetings. I believe that this is an effective way to hold boards and companies accountable on issues that pose material financial risk to companies and our financial market system as we transition to a net zero emissions future. And with that, many thanks again, Dave. It is always a pleasure to catch up with you.
Thank you, Rhonda. Appreciate it very much.